Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the SAF Holland SA conference call regarding the Q1 2019 results. At this time, all participants have been placed on a listen-only mode, and the floor will be open for questions following the presentation. Let me now turn the floor over to Mr. Schickling.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. A very warm welcome also from my side. I'm Michael Schickling, Head of Investor Relations, and I'd like now to hand over to Alexander Geis, our CEO.
Thank you, Mr. Schickling. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, also from my side. This is Alexander Geis speaking, and I would like to jump right away on our today's agenda on page 2, please. Firstly, we will be giving you an update on Q1 2019 at a glance, main bullet points, going then to the financial performance in quarter one, then followed by the market development, and later on the outlook for the remainder of the year. I would like to draw your attention to page 3, please. On page 3, we summarized the 6 main points to mention, which is, firstly, strong organic sales growth and adjusted EBIT margin development, which is on track. Secondly, America's region, we see first signs of improvement. Thirdly, we have a reporting continued high investment level to support our future growth. Next bullet point to mention is significantly better operating free cash flow. We will report later on. Fifth, we also did some acquisitions with PressureGuard and Stara Group, which strengthened the competitive position on the product and the market side. And last but not least, to mention the 2 big orders for trailer axles in Europe we just got, which are in the low 3-digit million range, both, and they are underpinning our sales and earnings targets for 2020. I would like now to jump to page 5, please, which is the financial performance in quarter one, and starting with an outlook or a report in Q1 for the different markets and the production rates. Starting with Western and Eastern Europe, we had an increase in the truck business of 3% and a trailer with a minus 15. Here to mention that European trailer, which we will see later on, is stable for SAF Holland. That means we outgrew the market and gained further market share, which is also very nice for our future aftermarket. Middle section is North America. You can see an increase in the truck business of plus 20% and the trailer with 13%. And on the right side, China with a plus 3 in the truck business and a minus 10 in the trailer business. So you can see there is a mixed picture in the different markets. On the next page, which is page number 6, reporting South America on the left side with an increase of 5% in the truck business and an incredible 35% increase in trailer business, which is a good recovery in our South American markets. And most of you might know that we have a company called KLL, and we also can confirm this from our picture in Brazil. India, on the right side, you see truck being a little bit under stress with a minus 6% and trailer with minus 30%. We have to say here that the first half year is a tough market in India since there is a slump of the trailer market due to restrictions on the maximum payload and buying restraints ahead of the April-May elections. But we are expecting a recovery in the second half of the year due to pre-buy for 2020 when new emissions come into place. On the next slide, which is page number 7, we would like to summarize the financials, starting with the sales. We were able to increase the sales coming from last year of roughly 295 million to now 346. That's an overall increase of more than 17%. And on the right side, we splitted that and can report an organic growth totaling 19.1 million, mainly coming from the Americas region. Acquisitions is part with 24.2 million, and we also had positive FX effects with close to 8 million. Coming to the adjusted EBIT numbers, we were able to gain 22.3%, coming from 20.3 million to now 24.8 in quarter 1/19. That's an increase overall from 6.9% last year to now 7.2%. And this is mainly also coming from earning improvements in the Americas region. On the following pages, we can see the regions in detail. I would like to ask you to flip to page number 8, please. Starting with the EMEA region, we are able to report an increase of 5.4%. On the right side, you can see the split. Organic growth was 1.1% increase. Acquisitions contributed 8.4 million in total, and we have to report a negative FX effect of 1.3 million in the EMEA region. Coming to the adjusted EBIT, you can see that we are coming from 19.2 million last year to now 17.1 million, which equals 9.7% in Q1 2019. And we have to report here that we have a positive consolidation effect from the elimination of intercompany results. Last year in Q1, we had the warehouse fire in the Russian subsidiary, which increased our EBIT last year in quarter one. Also, we can say that we see a product mix and material price effect, among others, in Q1 2019. If you please now flip the page to number 9, you can see the Americas region. Starting also here with the sales, an increase of 28.9 million to now 131 million. This sales increase is based on a strong customer demand for the truck and the trailer components. We can report a strong organic growth of 20.1% to now 122 million. And also here we have some positive FX effects in the range of close to 9 million. Now coming to the positive thing, which is the adjusted EBIT. Last year, having a negative EBIT of 0.7%, now jumping to a positive 5.2%, which is a good increase. And we can report here that we lowered our add-on operating expenses. We will see on the next page. We did also sourcing savings. We have a positive effect based on volume, product mix, and, of course, economics of scale with that increase in sales, and also the contractually agreed pace passing on of prior year's steel price helped to increase the adjusted EBIT. To mention also here is that we kicked off officially March 1 our project forward to drive the turnaround in the Americas. To give you a little bit meat on the bone, on the next page, which is page number 10, this is a graph showing you the historical add-on operating costs we had in 2017 and 2018. I would like to draw the attention to Q1 2018. So we had in the Americas add-on costs of 3.9 million, and the company was able to bring that down to now only 0.6 million in Q1 2019, which helped a lot to drive the adjusted EBIT up. So we are going in the right direction. And the last bullet point here also to mention, again, is Project Forward will bring down further the add-on operating costs in the course of the fiscal year 2019. So here we are on the right track. Next page, we can see the summary for the APAC region. As you can see, we are jumping from roughly 10 million last year, Q1, to now 26 million in 2019. This sales increase is mainly due to organic growth in that region, which is 8%, but mainly driven by our acquisitions, namely York in that region, with 15.6 million. If you see the adjusted EBIT development, we are coming from 1.3 million in Q1 2018 to now 1.9 million in 2019, which is then an adjusted EBIT margin of 7.4 for this year. The adjusted EBIT margin in APAC, the old structure, is slightly below previous year's level. I reported on the Indian trailer market, which is under pressure in Q1, or was under pressure in Q1 2019. And of course, since we added the York Cube, we have an overall margin dilution from the inclusion of York in Q1 2019. Now coming to the last region we have, which is China. which is on page number 12, please, you can see that we were not able to increase the sales further. So we are coming from 16 million to now 12.3 million. This is mainly driven by a declining export business of Chinese customers following the trade dispute between China and the U.S. And coming to the adjusted EBIT, this goes also below the line here. You can see last year we had a small margin with 0.4 million, and now we are negative with 1 million in the first quarter 2019. The lower adjusted EBIT margin is mainly due to insufficient capacity utilization at our Xiamen plant. And as you might recall, we are working on a greenfield, so we have temporary cost burdens from the duplicate structures in course of the greenfield operation and the opening. Here, please allow me to report that a German expert team, as we reported before, was sent in April and May to China to safeguard the results for the remainder of the year and also successfully ramp up our greenfield operation here. I am personally involved in talks and negotiations with domestic customers in terms also of long-term agreements, which we expect to get in the course of this year. Having said that, I would like to hand over to Matthias Heiden, reporting on other financial details. Please, Matthias.
Thank you, Alex. I'll take it from here. We're on page 13 with investments and depreciation. As revealed when we disclosed our 2019 investment plan, the investment level continues to be high with 14.4 million. We are now at 4.2% of sales, which is a reflection of the fact that the teams are executing the plan. This is the 14.4 million, the investment level in plant property, equipment, and intangible assets, which stood at 7 million in the first quarter of 2018. Both amounts include capitalized R&D expenses of 0.9 million. Focus areas of investments were, as Alex already mentioned, the Chinese greenfield project and investments in the United States into efficiency gains and expansion investments. The two taken together alone amount to around about 11 million out of the 14.4. Given the higher investment level, which started last year, we also see this reflected on the depreciation line as shown, now up to 9.5 million in the first quarter. Turning the page and looking at the net working capital ratio, overall net working capital is up by a total of 36.6 million or 22.7%. mainly driven by inventories, who were up even larger by 44.1 million, mainly due to ensure timely delivery to North American customers to allow us to capture growth and market share. Trade receivables only up 5.2% on improved cash collection, and then a successful management of trade payables that were up by 23.3 million compared to the first quarter of last year. Important to mention in the overall picture, of course, the net working capital ratio, which increased to 14.3% from 13.5%, whether that is the comparison to the first quarter of 2018 or the fourth quarter of 2018 doesn't really matter at this point, because both levels in both quarters were at 13.5%. But what is important, because that takes us to the next page already, is that the increase in net working capital from those 13.5 to 14.3 is not as steep as we have seen it, for example, in the transition from Q4 17 to Q1 18, which then, and now finally coming to page 15, is also reflected in the cash flow development. At 8.6 million, cash flow from operating activities was significantly above its Q1 18 level, where it stood at minus 22.5 million. And despite this renewed increase in sales that we described on earlier slides, the increase in net working capital, as just stated in the first quarter of 19, was significantly lower than last year. And net of the investing cash flow into plant, property, equipment, and intangible assets of 14.4 million, the operating free cash flow improved substantially to a minus 5.9 million euro compared to minus 29.5 million a year ago. We consider this to be a solid base and a solid start into the year to achieve our full year target of generating positive operating free cash flow again. Yet, having said that, the full focus on networking capital management continues, and just as much as the expert team has gone to China, we also highlighted when we talked about our annual results in Frankfurt that we would deploy additional measures on networking capital. That has been executed and is in full swing, but of course that focus of the organization needs to continue throughout the year. And with that said, I hand it back to Alex, who will wrap it up by giving you an outlook into the markets as we see them today and talking about our guidance.
Thank you, Matthias. I would like to draw your attention to page 17, which gives you an outlook for the fiscal year 2019 in terms of different markets. Also here, starting with Western and Eastern Europe, to summarize this here, is 2% is the market to be expected to grow in the truck business and the trailer business with a minus 10. In the middle section, North America, you see an increase in truck by plus 4 and trailer by plus 3. And China on the right side, you can see truck with a minus 4 and a minus 15 in the trailer business. Having said that, I would like to go to page 18 now to complete the outlook in the markets starting with South America. You can see further increase in truck with a plus 17 and the trailer market with a plus 5%. And India with the truck business declining by 12% and the trailer with then a minus 6 decline. So having said that, coming on page 20 now, please, to the financial outlook for the fiscal year 2019. We already talked about our 2018 results, so I would like to draw your attention to the middle section, which is the outlook for 2019, and we confirm firstly, the sales to increase in the range of 4 to 5% over 2014. And most importantly here also to mention the adjusted EBIT is predicted to be around the midpoint of the 7 to 8% range. Net working capital, we would like to achieve the 13%, and CapEx reported on roughly 68 to 70 million in the course of 2019. Going now to the last page, which is page 21, you can see the key takeaways, which we would like to give you. So you see there is a mixed picture in the relevant markets. Secondly, which is very important, is North America is well on track with further improvements coming with our dedicated restructuring program forward started March 1. Thirdly, countermeasures are in place to improve the Chinese efficiency. And then we have to report, we have our full focus also, as Matthias Heiden mentioned, on the network and capital management. And last, but very important, we can say we take back control of our performance. And having said that, thank you everybody for listening to us. And I would like to hand over to Mr. Schickling again.
Thank you. The lines are now open for your questions, please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press 9 followed by the star key on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw your question, please press 9 star again. Please press 9 star now if you'd like to raise a question. And the first question comes from Yasmin Steilen, calling from the Commerzbank. Over to you.
Hello. Thanks for taking my questions. Three, if I may. First of all, on group level, could you shed more color on the 30 basis points gross margin improvement? Or put it the other way around, could you also quantify the headwinds from the inventory write-down and in which region this affected? My second question would be on China. I mean, obviously, we have limited visibility on what Trump will trigger, so there's no visibility on the tariff issue. But could you shed more light on the temporary cost burn from the duplicate structures you mentioned? So when will the Greenfield plan to be up and running, and is it fair to assume a gradual improvement already in the second quarter and also return then into positive territories in the second half? And the last question on the guidance, following your Q1 results, your fiscal year guidance, sales guidance of 4 to 5% sales growth looks, rather cautious. Could you give us some color on what kind of headwinds you expect in the coming quarters? Thanks very much.
Yeah, I can. Good morning, Yasmin. Thank you for your questions. You find me pensive there for a second, preparing for the first answer. Just to keep them in order, your first question was around the gross profit development. Of course, on the positive side, let's remind ourselves, although we didn't have it in this presentation this time, of the visualization as to what impacts gross profit in the Americas. So in the gross profit, everything is still included, which also means that as we see improvements, pass steel prices on, and take down additional operating costs, there is a reflection, a positive reflection this time around in the gross profit because the impacts have become lower. But you inquired more specifically about the headwind from inventory. And here we have a headwind, just to give you a ballpark figure, because I ask for your understanding if I don't want to go into too much detail, of around a million headwind, just to put that into perspective. Mm-hmm. I hope that helps you.
Thanks very much. That's very helpful.
Okay, thank you. And then I have to look at Alex, who prepared, I think, the next set of questions. Do you want to go into China?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, Yasmin. Good morning. I would like to give you a little bit more light into the Chinese business. So basically, we have two different streams of revenue in China, which is obviously the domestic market, but also a good portion of our overall business goes to the U.S. with a so-called intermodal business. That's container chassis. Basically, we have a burden coming from the U.S. Everybody knows that there is some tariff talks between the U.S. and the Chinese government. At the moment, we have a tariff burden of plus 10%, so the U.S. government puts 10% burden on everything coming from our plants into the United States. This means for us there is a price pressure not also on us but also on our clients in China building those components and trailers to be shipped to the U.S., that's the reason why we increased our focus very much on the domestic market and also the domestic clients, not only the really big ones, but also the medium and the smaller ones, to increase, first of all, the sales and also limit the dependency on big customers, but also on the export business. And one more question from your side was when we are going to open the greenfield. So the greenfield is running at the moment with installation of robots and machinery. So we have dedicated teams doing this, and we expect the greenfield to be ready in the second half of 2019. This expert team is led by our COO, which has 10 years of excessive experience in China. He was living in China for the last 10 years. So he is there on a half permanent basis to really make sure that we safeguard our Chinese operations.
Yasmin, did we cover them all? Because there were three of them. I just want to make sure we didn't miss anything.
The last one was regarding the guidance, just looking at your top-line guidance of 4 to 5% sales growth, including M&A. It looks rather conservative after the first quarter, so I'd just like to get some more insights on what you expect on potential headwinds that you do not become more positive after the first quarter. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for asking that question, which gives us the opportunity to put that into perspective. Maybe we were a little quick on this, but this is what we had included the second set of market development-related slides for in the presentation to convey the message, and we have been consistent about this. Also in the key takeaways, there is a mixed picture in relevant markets. And at this point in time, it's a little challenging for Alex and me to look into the second half of the year because we cannot ignore the signs that we see reflected in the market research, those were pages 17 and 18, that there is some headwind in some areas of the world. I think we are well positioned, which is why we still hold on to positive growth overall, but we cannot ignore that, and that is what we wanted to convey with that. And that is why you might think after a good start into the year, this looks a little conservative, but we wanted to put that into perspective by sharing our view on the markets.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Maybe one last point to add here. In Q1 2018, we didn't have all the acquisitions on our P&L, so they were under steam in the Q2, Q3, and following Q4. So to compare Q1 last year with Q1 of this year is a little bit of a different look than going into the remainder of the year.
Sure, I completely understand this, but just looking on the organic growth, it was still at 6%.
Yes.
So it gives you at least some cushion for the remainder year.
We're working hard on it.
Hopefully.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Christian Ludwig, who's calling from Bankhaus Lampe. Over to you.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Also, a couple of questions from my side. I'll just pick up where basically Jasmin left it off. Could you just give us maybe an indication how Q2 is currently running, especially with respect to Europe? As I mean, the market predictions are minus 10. You said in Q1 you were basically flat. So had a nice market share gain there. How do you see the second quarter so far developing in Europe? Would be question number one. More detailed, you gave us a very positive, for sure, is a very positive on the net working capital development in a sense that your free cash flow, operating cash flow improved nicely. But looking at your report, I saw that at least part of this improvement was due to the fact that you increased your factoring by 10 million. Is that correct, or did I overlook something there? And then last question, just to round it off, you have pointed out that part of the miss in EBIT in EMEA in Q1 was due to one-off you had last year in your numbers. When I look at last year's presentation, there was no talk about any one-off in that number. So I'm a little bit puzzled where that pops up now or why, and could you at least give us the size of this one-off that you had included in last year's EMEA EBIT? Thank you.
Maybe I start with the third question. Christian, good morning. It's Matthias. What we wanted to avoid today, and I'll give you the number in just a second, what we wanted to avoid today, because this is the experience that we've had in past calls or when doing roadshows and one-on-ones, is that each and every time the EMEA margin only moves just a little bit downwards, we have this question from the community being so concerned around the market development in Europe, which is why we just wanted to make sure we don't have that discussion again today. The EMEA business is in good shape. The profitability is in good shape, and Alex can comment on Europe qualitatively in Q2 in just a second. And so we just wanted to highlight that in the previous year, there is at least a million in there on the consolidation effect from Russia. We also had included that in the Q1 report, but you are correct, Christian, we didn't make a big thing out of it in the reporting on the PowerPoint in the first quarter of last year. I hope that that helps, and maybe Alex can build on my thoughts around the European business and talk a little bit about his observations there.
Absolutely. Christian, good morning. Would like to give you, of course, I cannot mention data or figures, but I can give you a little bit outlook into 2019 for Europe. There are different views depending on the product lines. So basically, if you see the standard trailer segment, which is at the moment under pressure, okay, we see that the order intake is not as strong as it was last year, because last year in Q1 and Q2, it was absolutely record year, not only for us, but also for others in that segment. So this is one segment which is at the moment a little bit under pressure. Why the trailer decline is reported to be 10% for the whole 2019. If you see the tankers, silos, they are already booked out into the mid of 2020, so you cannot get any vehicles in this year. Also, the low beds and specialty trailers, they are totally booked in 2019, and everybody's taking orders into 2020 already. So you have a mixed picture. Saying again that we had a record year in 2018, so if the market only would be dropping by 10%, that would be still a very, very good year. But as I mentioned before, a couple of years ago, we started with a strategy not only to target the big ones, but also the medium and the small trailer builders with a specialty business. This pays off now since we gained market share, especially with those and with the new contracts with also two big ones we mentioned and released a couple of weeks ago. I think we are quite satisfied with that. And we don't have a big fear for the remainder of 2019 here in Europe.
So just as I asked, so you do not see, at least for SAF, a 10% decline of trailer, European trailer business this year?
Well, Christian, we reported Q1. Q1, we increased a little bit, so that means we outgrew the market. Of course, market will be under pressure from the standpoint of today. If there would be a decline, we would do our very best to also further outgrow that, because we have so many customers we can compensate, and actually we are compensating.
Okay, thank you. Fair enough.
That leaves us with your third question, and I really appreciate that question because it's fun for CFOs and the team that you guys actually managed to read footnotes in the report, because your question arises from the footnote of the consolidated cash flow statement in the quarterly statement. You're absolutely right. As part of the focus activities on networking capital management, and this was also transparent in the full year report already, I had accelerated because we signed another factoring contract with a banking partner, the factoring program, this quarter it was 42.9 million versus 30.5 in the year before. So that is true. I don't want this to be misunderstood in such a way, SAF Holland is just resorting to factoring to drive up the cash flow. It is overall around the acceleration and improvement of the cash flow, of the cash conversion ratio, and thus the availability of liquidity to the group at an earlier point in time. This is to be seen in combination of the full program that we're running internally to keep the organization focused on cash collection at the same time. So when I said earlier on improved cash collection, it is certainly impacted by factoring, but on the other side, we're also really accelerating our efforts, and we're going after some of the things that in the past we haven't really been too focused on, and that is part of the focus group that I am leading that was assigned to me from the board. I hope that helps, Christian.
Could you just give us an indication what you believe your average factoring rate for the full year will be? Is this 40 million a good number, or do you believe it's going to rise actually further to, I don't know, 50, 60, whatever?
No, I think, you know, it's a little difficult to sort of look into the crystal ball here, but I think the 40 should be around about a good number, give or take. I hope that's a fair answer, because I have no plans up my sleeve at this point to brutally accelerate this into one direction just to make it look nice, because what is important that we substantially refined, if you like, for lack of a better expression, the cash flow generating capability that is inside this company. We had lost it for a moment in 18, which is reflected in the numbers, but the idea is to get back to those levels, but not based on factoring alone. So the 40 should be a good yardstick for you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Frederick Bitter, who's calling from Hauck & Aufhäuser. Over to you.
Thank you very much. Good morning, gentlemen. I would like to inquire a bit more about the Americas region, and if you could share, after you've obviously been there a few times in the last couple of weeks, and now with Project Forward really targeting this plant consolidation and the operating structures there. What would you think is a reasonable midterm operating margin target?
Yeah, this is the couple million dollar question. But good morning, first of all. Thanks for that. Maybe I take a stab at that. You know, I believe it is too early to talk about reasonable midterm margin targets, and I'm saying that for a couple of reasons. Number one, I don't really like to guide on regions. That's not something that we do. Number two, you have seen us do this last year a couple of times, and then we ended up in negative surprises. And you heard during the annual conference in Frankfurt from both Alex and me that we want to focus on execution and improving the overall picture. Now, with that said, as an introductory statement, that sounds a little bit like I'm trying to avoid the answer, which I'm not. I think midterm, right, we need to come out of this, and midterm, the Americas region, and you know the weight of the region in the financial model, will contribute to us making the 8% margin target. Now, whether it will be, or at which point in time, I should say, it will be non-dilutive to the group margin, that is too early to say, and I would rather be held accountable together with Alex on this in the future. But what we see right now is that the plan and the financial model for 19, and I'm wording myself very carefully because it's only one quarter gone, but seems to be working out at this point. And if you look at something that Alex mentioned earlier already, but on page 10, we showed the decline in the add-on operating costs. If I may just come back to that for 1 second, those 0.6 million are composed of expedited freight and logistics surcharges, still very few compensation payments and debit notes from customers, and much lower plant inefficiencies than in the past. So what I'm trying to say is the improvement in the Americas margin has those elements that Alex highlighted, but we also slowly but surely see improvements at plant level kicking in, and depending on the speed at which we can execute that, you will have that margin improvement. But given the scope of the task and how we failed at it in the past, please allow me to not sort of nail it down as to a specific quarter in the future and one specific margin target. I hope that is acceptable, sir.
Yeah, no. You obviously you gave a lot of details, so I could read some things from at least. So that's already helpful, and thanks for the clarification, Matthias. That's quite helpful.
Maybe let also one addition from my side, so we can speak about the history. So and historically, that region was in some years already somewhere around 8 to 9% adjusted EBIT. This is a good number. We like that. Okay. What we are going to do and what we did already is we push our focus on the fifth wheel business to further increase the aftermarket. So we had a dedicated team now looking into that. So we are pushing a lot and we have the highest market share of all the suppliers in that industry. And secondly, we see a further increase of the disc brake technology in the United States and Canada and also in Mexico. This is our bread and butter business. This is where we are good at worldwide. We are increasing our production to fulfill the demands of the big fleets. We gathered some big fleet orders already last year, but also this year. And we are draw our attention mainly also to this product group, which is a good product group and is a good contribution to the overall margin.
Great. Thank you very much for the details on this one. Okay. And then still talking about operating margin, but this time in APAC, could you comment a bit on how the York integration is actually developing? Obviously, it was still margin dilutive in Q1, but where do you see this business in terms of margins in the future?
Yeah. Overall, the York integration has progressed very well. Both on the business integration side, meaning addressing the joint customers and the new customers that we acquired, but also with regard to the synergies that we baked into the business case on the sourcing side, number one, and number two, from the legal entity integration. Some of the smaller legal entity integrations still take some time until they have the last tick marks from the authorities, because here we are in a region where you need a couple of approvals and not just one, but that is very well on track. What we have seen, though, in Q1 now is that, as Alex described, we've been hit by a downturn in the Indian market, which obviously drops through the P&L and just impacts the overall margin of the York business and then now the standalone region. What I have said in the past is the following in terms of enabling you to bake this into your models. We show a 7.4% start into the year, mainly driven by the reasons stated on the slide. But I said that the overall target for APAC midterm and hopefully also already at the end of the year is that it is non-dilutive to the 2020 margin target of 8%. And this is how we manage the region on the adjusted EBIT line. We now just need to make sure that we work successfully through the situation in the Indian marketplace. But that's how we look at York being obviously one of the cornerstones in the APEC region.
And to add also here from my side, basically the biggest market for our company York is India. In India, we grew the market share meanwhile to roughly 50% of all the trailer production in India. And what we saw is a totally underdeveloped aftermarket there. So basically we didn't have a dedicated team taking care of the aftermarket. And this now also is under evaluation, because this also shows a big potential for us in the years to come.
So with that focus on the aftermarket, we will be able to leverage those 200-plus service stations that York has across India already that we acquired, that were very attractive to us when we went after the acquisition. We just now need to refocus them on serving the installed base.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that's very clear. And the last one I had is just a small housekeeping question also on the finance side, though. What's your guidance for PPA and restructuring and transaction costs in 2019?
That should be in line, based on what we have at this point, in line with what we have seen in the past, where I said that you should assume probably a run rate of 2 million per quarter. I have touched on that in previous quarter calls, where it was a little bit higher because we had that step up on inventory from the York acquisition, where it was somewhere around 2.3 as a result of that. But for the full year, without meaning this to be guidance, but just to help you in your understanding, it should be around 8 million for the 2018 acquisitions. And then there is a little impact, like a small impact from the small acquisitions that we did in 19. But from the 18 acquisitions, it's 8 million.
Yeah, thank you very much. And what about restructuring and transaction cost?
Restructuring and transaction cost is something that I cannot forecast at this point, given that the overall, as Alex said, you will see restructuring costs arising from Project Forward in the future as well. And that is, and forgive me for that, that is something that I cannot necessarily forecast at this point, because we will work with external help and consultants to help us on our way. If I tell you that restructuring and transaction costs in Q1 were 3.5 million at this point, then that is something that is not necessarily super helpful, because it might not be indicative of the quarters to come. So bear with us on that one.
Yeah, sure. Thanks so much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Mr. Nikolai Kemp, who's calling from the Deutsche Bank. Over to you.
Yeah, hi, good morning. It's Nikolai Kemp speaking from Deutsche Bank. One question on your largest region, Europe. You mentioned negative product mix effects. Can you specify them? And also maybe about the product mix in the U.S. How did that improve? Thanks.
Yeah, maybe I can start, and then from a financial analysis perspective, and then Alex can chime in if he likes more from a bottom up, from a customer facing perspective. Overall, when we include the phrase on the product mix side, it can mean two things. But in this case, specifically in EMEA, it means that the OEM business was a little stronger than the aftermarket business, which obviously has a margin impact at the same time. And then sometimes what can happen that within the product mix that you sell, products that are slightly less profitable than in a previous quarter because you sell some more standard rather than variants. That is the root cause of that. In the Americas, we have that structural growth driver on the trailer side. So we did grow and gain market share because we see a good movement and momentum in the U.S. trailer business that we run. The demand for the disc brake is there, so that is on track. But at the same time, we also performed well on the Americas aftermarket, because we actually managed through the increased efficiencies, for example, to further reduce, although it was not a massive impact, but to further reduce the aftermarket backlog in the U.S., which obviously helps on that as well. Just to sort of repeat something that we tried to explain in Frankfurt during the press conference, something that we have also executed, which is impacting the margin in this distribution, are the exercises around analyzing the product portfolio and the customer relationships, meaning that we stop selling products at negative margins and review individual customer relationships to make them more profitable. And that is then obviously also contained in the term product and or segment mix. I hope that helps, Nicola.
Yep, that's clear. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Franz Schaal, who's calling from Warburg Research. Over to you.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my question. I have really one last question regarding your margin, especially in the Americas. Can you probably specify the impact of the lower steel price we saw in Q1?
You find us digging and turning some pages once, because the one thing that at this point, and I don't mean to answer with a return question, but the impact of the lower steel price in Q1 is not all that significant for us on the purchasing side. What is more important is that we have passed on the historic steel price increases from the second half of 18. Because under those price index clauses that we have in customer contracts, we had a cutoff point with the 31st of December or the 1st of January. And if I now say that there was a small benefit from lower steel price increases, that would distort the picture, because the impact of raising prices with the historic, or based on the historic steel price movement, outweighs that, or adds to that, I should say.
Okay, that's clear. But going forward, is the assumption right that we will see, let's say, a smoothing out of the steel price effect for the next few quarters, and that the impact probably was the highest in Q1?
Let me try to answer your question without giving you too much details here in steel prices. If you see the effects driving the margin up in Q1 in the Americas, steel price effects had some contribution to that, yes, but it was not the main driver. Main driver was efficiency of scales, because we increased the output, that we had a lot of savings from the sourcing side, which we gained traction in Q1 already, starting end of last year. So we benefited from that in Q1. We'll also be benefiting for the remainder of the year. Steel price only has a small portion of this.
Okay, thanks. That's clear.
And with regard to the smoothening out front, let's just recall, and that is why you found me thinking here, let's just recall the mechanism. It is a little difficult, obviously, for us to forecast the steel price. I do a lot of reading and researching around it. But it's a very interesting market because we don't just source that one kind of steel, if you like, but several. And then we feel that scrap steel price is a good indicator. But depending on how that develops over the first half of 19, we then have another cutoff point towards the customers for the second half. So that is just the cycle, the mechanics in the customer contract, and that is why your question is a little bit difficult to answer. As of today, you would think that there is a little bit of a smoothening out, but it's difficult to say that it going into the second half.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Philippe Lorraine, who's calling from Berenberg. Over to you.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Philippe Lorrain from Berenberg. A couple of add-ons from my side. Just to bounce back on your comment on the fact that you are reviewing some products and also some customers in the Americas in order to kick out products that were generating negative margins. Did that already happen in Q1, if I understand that correctly? And how is your thinking with regard to that? How long will that process actually take to be completely worked through? That's the first one.
Okay, so basically what we did, we started reviewing right in the middle of Q1. I did that by myself. And when we say that we are reviewing product groups and customers, does not necessarily mean that we stop selling those products. So we go in both directions. First of all, we ask the question, is that product being manufactured at the right cost? If not, then we have to track down the cost, either by manufacturing smarter or with the help of our suppliers. And in the other direction, we have an open dialogue with our customers and really discuss those matters. And in most cases, it does not mean that we stop selling the products, but basically we get a higher margin or a higher sales price we feel comfortable with. So summarizing that, we started Q1 already, but it will be under full steam Q2 and Q3.
Okay, great. So it's a topic only for 2019, if I understand that correctly, more than 2020?
This is a process we should be done on a regular basis, so at least twice a year. And this is a process now we implemented also in the Americas region.
Okay, great. So an ongoing process. Great. And then the second question is actually based on your guidance. I think if I take the annual report when you were mentioning the 4-5% year-on-year growth that you're expecting, you mentioned actually at constant scope and at FX. So constant scope meaning that you've got the acquisition effect that we've seen in Q1, but is it still valid that when you guide for the 4-5%, that's also excluding any FX benefits during the remainder of the year and also the ones that we've seen during Q1?
No, that is not correct. If I understand your question correctly, Philippe, that is. What we normally do, like any other company, is obviously that we build a financial model and guidance in the budget process based on assumptions around FX. And if those assumptions hold true, which is always the footnote on the guidance slide, which doesn't specifically mention FX, but obviously the result of a deterioration in the environment is also reflected in FX, then the guidance wouldn't hold true. What I haven't included in any guidance calculation, also when I review, is a headwind or a tailwind on the FX side. I look at the overall picture of the company, and then I deal with FX as part of my hedging activities, if I do hedge, that is, and as part of the ongoing business. So I hope I understood your question correctly there.
Well, I mean, it's just in the annual report you say this forecast is based on the assumption of constant exchange rates and an unchanged scope of consolidation. So I mean, just after Q1, what you say is basically still unchanged FX environment. So we take whatever was there in Q1, and now we reflect the fact that the underlying market development is a bit weaker. So we keep overall the 4-5% in reported terms.
That's correct.
That's,
yes.
Okay. Good. Then to bounce back also on that guidance, in the 4-5% growth that you've got in the top line, would you share with us how much of that roughly is coming from the fact that you're passing through slowly but surely these raw mats inflation that you had last year, i.e. what's the contribution in there, and also if the 4-5% growth that you assume actually really reflect one-to-one the market conditions that you've shown in the slides 17 and 18. I try basically just to understand what kind of outperformance you're generating versus the market, and if that outperformance is related to market shares or just like content, share of wallet, these kind of items, and how that might evolve going forward.
That's a very complex question that you're asking. I'll try to keep the answer crisp, in as much as if I heard the first element of your question correctly, you asked about how much of the sales growth would come from passing on raw material prices from the past, which means you sell the same product at a higher price, which basically means you are in a steady state, but you kind of artificially or technically increase your sales. That is not baked in like that in the financial modeling that we did. We looked at, in the process, we looked at markets and customer opportunities. That is where that growth comes from. If there is something that helps us on the raw materials, that is good, because that obviously drops through to the bottom line. But there is no assumption that X percent must come from steel price increases, because let's face it, what is it that you do in a difficult customer situation where the customer pushes back and all of a sudden doesn't accept that increase? Then my modeling would be destroyed, where in fact I would then say to the organization, no, you need to go out and compensate that with another customer. That's one thing. The other piece is if you look at the revenue distribution across the regions, with still the main revenues coming from the Americas and Europe, while the other two regions are certainly delivering a higher revenue share than in the past, then I believe Alex described it perfectly well, that we feel that we are well positioned in Europe and that our performance in Europe for 19 should be better than what the market development is forecasted to be. And you saw yourself on the data and the performance that we feel we are well positioned in North America as well. That leaves me with the last piece, because you asked about, you know, how much is coming from market share gains and so on. Well, you saw, and maybe Alex should comment on that, but you saw on the two press releases that we managed to sign those long-term agreements with the two customers. We penetrate those two customers more deeply than in the past and have secured future business as well, just as much as we safeguarded the 2019 business, for lack of a better expression. So at the same time, having said that, if you penetrate a customer more deeply, you increase your share, which obviously means somebody else is losing it and I'm winning market share. Is that fair in response to your question?
Yeah, sure, sure. I understand then that that's also reflected in this 4 to 5% growth. I was just meaning, what should we expect then in the years ahead? Should we expect, for instance, if we say market is evolving at X percent, that you realize X percent plus another Y percent factor because you're penetrating your customers much better than in the past and increase the share of wallet, take a bit of market share as well? So is that an ongoing trend that you observe here? Or is it more like a kind of a one-off gain, and once we ramp up these contracts, that's going to be already in the financials and that's it?
Well, basically, if a market grows by 2% and we are also only growing by 2%, this is not satisfying for us. So satisfying for us and what drives us is to outgrow the markets, doesn't matter where in the world. Also, a very good aspect of the whole thing is with the growth of market share is an increased population base. And as you might know, I also focus a lot of the aftermarket. The more population we create, the more aftermarket gains we have in the future. So we already put pressure on gaining market shares and increased population over the last couple of years, and we see also an increased market share here. This is the whole story behind that concept. But basically, if a market only grows by X percent and we also only grow by X percent, this is not why we are here. It has limits, of course, because if you grow your market share to like 60, 70, 80%, then you have to have a sweet spot where it makes sense to further grow by defending, but defending mainly means it costs money. So we are always looking for the sweet spot in terms of market share.
Oh, okay, great. If I may, just in Q1, in this roughly 6% organic growth that you had, it's just to bounce back on the comment that you made at the beginning with regard to the steel price, which is not really backed in the guidance, and I understand that because it depends on customer discussions, which are not guaranteed in advance. But in the 6%, you probably still had a little bit of a tailwind as well coming from this raw mat pass through, at least in the States. And I was just interested to know if you can roughly quantify that effect, just to give us a little bit more color how you actually perform in volume terms versus the market.
So I think, Philippe, I was about to say the wrong name, sorry. Philippe, don't expect this to be a significant contribution on the top line that we would hide behind and say, we have improved in the markets and so on. Consider this to be not even reaching the 2 million euro.
Okay, interesting. Okay, and then I've got really like two very quick housekeeping questions. So the first one on the add-on operating costs in North America, I mean 0.6 million in Q1 seems like it's not very high level now. Probably over time it's going to go down further to zero. I'm just interested if at this point of time you kind of observe that and say the development might be a little bit volatile in the quarters ahead, or if we should expect it to gradually trend down?
Well, the goal, of course, is for it to gradually trend down over time, but given that we are accelerating our efforts by introducing and executing this project forward, I wouldn't exclude, just to put ourselves on the safe side, that there could be a little bit of a fluctuation in case, for example, we run improvements in a plant under full steam and capacity where we might need to incur, for example, higher expedited freight because the improvement project could potentially delay a delivery to the customer that we would then need to catch up on by spending money on getting it to the customer on time. Because I've tried to explain a few times, not in this call, but in different conversations, that the challenge has been in 18, and this is what we're finally tackling now, the challenge has been to run those improvement projects in the plants while you are at 100% plus of your capacity. Yeah? And so that is why I'm saying there could be a little bit of volatility, but our clear objective is to reduce it gradually over time.
Yeah, thanks for that. That's exactly what I meant. And really then the last one, just to bounce back on the factoring question. So if I read correctly, actually the effect from factoring in Q1 was just another 1.4 million because we should take into account the fact that you actually increased really the factoring volume in Q4 last year. Is that right?
That's correct. We had to discuss this. I'm not sure who asked the question, whether it was on a roadshow or in Frankfurt. But that is correct, and thank you for pointing it out. If I wasn't clear on that, already in Q4, there was a higher contribution from factoring. I had said in my answer to Christian that I had signed a new program with a factoring partner and had accelerated those efforts in the second half year, but you are right to point to the Q4 number because it is reflected in there as well, yes. But Christian's question was obviously year over year.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm back in the queue.
Thank you.
Thank you. If anybody else does have any questions, please press 9* now. Okay, Mr. Schickling. Oh, we do have one more question, actually. It's from Christian Ludwig, who's calling from Bankhaus Lampe. Over to you.
Yes, sorry, just two quick follow-up questions. One for Alex. You mentioned that historically the Americas had an adjusted EBIT margin between 8 and 9%. It was always my understanding that that was also helped by some project orders from the U.S. military, so that should be a level that most likely would not be achievable again with your run-of-the-mill commercial vehicle business. Has there something changed that you believe you can make that again?
Well, it would be great if we would get another good military contract like we had a couple of years ago, but that was less than 10% of the overall volume we had at that time, and then the adjusted EBIT was even higher than the 8 to 9%.
Okay, understood. Thank you. Great. And then finally, Matthias, the depreciation run rate of around about 9 million that we had at the beginning of this year, is that something that we could take as a quarterly run rate, or should we also model in a slight increase quarter by quarter?
Well, given that the investment levels go up and the share of depreciation in terms of sales is going up compared to previous years, there will obviously be quarter over quarter, year over year, an increase in that, but I would turn to the slides. We're a little bit above 4% right now in terms of investments related to sales. That is the run rate that we anticipate overall. It depends a little bit now, obviously, on the phasing of the project, but I have tried to describe this question or tried to answer this question in such a way that you should assume that per every 10 million capex, you have about 1.3 million additional depreciation in terms of the modeling. So you could also express this more eloquently than I just did, but that gives you a hint as to what the average lifetime of the assets is in our own financial modeling.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a follow-up question from Philippe Lorrain from Berenberg. Over to you.
Yeah, thank you for taking my follow-up. It directly bounced back on what Christian was asking. Do I see that correctly, that in the 9.5 million depreciation that you had in Q1, there's as well some effect coming from IFRS 16, i.e. you increase your lease liabilities in the balance sheet by about, I think it's between 15 and 20 million euro. And it seems to be like we should see now the operating lease expense as depreciation in the P&L, and that's also seen then in the cash flow statement, in the financing cash flow as a 2 million payment for finance lease instead of the nearly zero that we had 1 year ago exactly.
So So it's funny that you asked that question, Philippe, because I kind of anticipated somebody challenging me on IFRS 16 this morning. So I went and spoke to my people again this morning. While I knew the overall answer, I wanted the detail. So the IFRS 16 impact on the balance sheet is an extension of the balance sheet by 17.9 million, to be very precise, because we put those leasing liabilities on the balance sheet. When we then look at the impact on the P&L, it is not material for the group. So that is something that is very, very low, given the kind of contracts or the structure of contracts that we have and given the current interest environment. That's the information that I got, but that also reconciles with the numbers that I looked at. Should there be a need to follow up, we'll be happy to do that after the call.
Okay, sure. I understand. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Schickling, there are no further questions today.
So thank you very much for your participation. If you have follow-up questions, please do not hesitate to contact the IR department. Thank you and goodbye. Have a good day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone.